introducing Ezra.
Okay, Ezra Perek Zayin Pasik Zayin. Vayalu mivnei Yisrael min akoyhenim v'halavim v'hamishoyrim v'hashoyarim v'hanesinim el Yerushalayim. They ascended from the Yisraelim, the Kohanim, the Levim. Now here when we mention Levim, we break it up in different groups. We have Levim, and we don't specify any specific role or function, just Levim. And then we get more specific, the Hamishoyrim, those who sang, the singers. I assume the people who sang include the people that played the musical instruments. We know there's some Levim specialized in playing musical instruments, some Levim just, they would use their voice to sing. The Hashoyarim, the gatekeepers, it was their job, learn Misach the Midos, Misach the Yoma. Now, well, not necessarily security, just covered, honor guards. Okay, there is security also. I assume it probably depended on different periods of time in the history of the Bayis Sheni. There were times when they needed real security. There were times they were just there as honor guards. And that begs the question, if we have here two categories, V'hamishoyrim and V'hashoyarim, what then does it mean when the Pasuk begins with V'halaviyim? So the answer given is, they had other roles. This is very interesting because we don't. It's not clear what the other roles were. We know that in the time of the Midbar, they were assigned to carry, to transport, to erect and take apart the Mishkan and to carry the Mishkan in the desert. But here, the Mishkan is not a Mishkan; it's a Mikdash. So what exactly were they doing? So the Mepharshim tell us they were in charge of maintenance. They were in charge of housekeeping. They had a very complex system. Like we mentioned, we joked about this, that you go to certain institutions of higher education or other organizations and you find more maintenance men, more people that are running around with walkie-talkies and keys and whatnot, than people who actually... Shalom Aleichem, good morning, good to see you back. Than people who are actually involved in providing the education or being educated. But they were in charge, the Halavim here refers to their role as being in charge of the upkeep of the Beis HaMikdash. Then we have the Hanesinim. The Hanesinim were critical because they were the ones that provided energy. Today we take it for granted. You just turn on the water, there's water, you take all your turn, you pull out the something to the outlet. But in ancient times there was no modern plumbing and there was no electricity. So someone had to provide wood for fuel and someone had to provide water. They, the Nesinim, were assigned that task. These were people that were part of the Eretz Canaan, fooled Moshe, in fact. Moshe and Yehoshua, different Midrashim and David, into making believe that they were from a foreign nation, coming to make peace, and they were later discovered to be residents of the land of Canaan, and al pi halacha they were mechuyif either to be megayer, to accept upon themselves the sheva mitzvahs bnei neach, which it seems they did not want to accept, or to leave, or to go to war with Klal Yisrael. So these nesinim, they tricked Moshe, Yehoshua, and David, or not necessarily David, tricked David, but they were problematic. And really, al pi halacha, Moshe, Yehoshua, and David were allowed to kill them and exile them. But because it would have been a chilul Hashem, the world would not understand. They would present their documents that they made a treaty with the Jewish people. The Klal Yisrael felt it was not in their best interest to take what they were entitled to carry out what they were entitled to and have them expelled from the land, but instead they allowed them to remain there. But they were assigned very specific tasks, to chop wood and to draw water. El Yerushalayim. So these people, they were exiled with the Jewish people for 70 years. Now they are returning. They're coming to Yerushalayim. B'shnas Sheva li'Artachshast HaMelech, in the 7th year of Artachshast, the king. This is Dar Yovish. Let's see over here, Rashi, Pasuk Zayin. Yes.
Isn't it very odd that Rashi and Sudos don't say anything about describing these people?
Why? I mean, Rashi doesn't say. We know that Rashi doesn't translate every single. Rashi did not view himself. Okay, they felt that they don't.
So in other places.
That's a general.
Maybe the word can go somewhere else.
Okay, I don't know. I don't know. I hear the question. They felt that there's nothing they felt was critical to add to their parish in this pasuk. I don't know. I'm not sure. But okay, it could be there is some point. Let's see the Rashi pasuk Zayin b'shnas sheva hi shnas shana achar tashlum habayis. So the 7th year is 1 year after we know that the Beis Hamikdash was completed in the 6th year. That was the previous parak. The Mikdash was completed in the 6th year because the permission was granted in the 2nd year of Daryavish, and we learned that it took 4 years and 3 months. So, assuming it took place, let's just round off the numbers. If the binyan began in year number 2, and it took 4 years, that brings us to year number 6. So, in year number 6 is when the Beis HaMikdash was complete in the Malchus of Daryavish Ben Esther, who we're calling here in this pasuk, Artach Shah. Now, a year later, it took 1 year later, is one we learned yesterday, Baruch ben Neriah died, and Ezra now made his ascent. Ezra was studying under his Rebbe, Baruch ben Neriah, who was very old and was not able to make the trip from Bavel to Eretz Yisrael. We'll see in a few moments how long the trip took. It took a couple of months. He was not able to do so they waited. He was there all this time until he died, and now he is going to make his ascent, and it was in the 7th year of Artachshast. Artachshasta, who Daryavish. Okay, let's go further. Now let's see over here the Mitzudos Pasuk Zayin Vayalu Milvad Mash Olu Berishoyne in Zerubbabel Olu Shuv in Ezra. So this is called the second ascent. Now we have to mention this is the second major aliyah. The truth is there were three aliyahs because the first aliyah took place in the time of Koresh. The first year of Koresh, when he issued a proclamation that the Jews can return to Eretz Yisrael, that was the Pekida. That was 70 years since the Golus of Yehoyakim. But then what happened 3 years later? Everything came to a halt. When everything came to a halt, it's not recorded, but we have indications, and it's mentioned in Chazal, that many people came back. Even though originally in the first year of Koresh, 42,360 people did ascend, but and they laid the foundation and they celebrated, it was a great celebration, 42,360 people, and we went to list the whole long list of all the yichos, of all the various groups which were present. But when things were stopped through the sitna of the Aseres Bnei Haman and the people that are listed, many people seemingly felt that it was too difficult to remain in Eretz Yisrael because what are we here for? There's no Beis HaMikdash, we have enemies, it's Sakonis Nefashos, let's go back to our comfortable life in Bavel, or let's go back to Bavel and lobby in the government and try to work out some arrangement with, at that time with Koresh, and then later Achashverosh, to allow us to continue resuming the building of the Beis HaMikdash. Among that group of people appears Daniel, because Daniel was present in Shushan HaBira during the time of the miracle of Purim, and the miracle of Purim took place in between the time of Koresh, when permission was granted to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash and then stopped, and Daryavish, it took place in between those 14 years, the miracle of Purim, and we find in the miracle of Purim that Daniel was there and Mordechai was there. And the question is, but didn't Mordechai, we have indications that Mordechai and Daniel went to Eretz Yisrael to participate in the rebuilding of the Beis HaMikdash. It must be that after Koresh issued a stay, no more can you build the Beis HaMikdash because I'm receiving reports from the Aseres Bnei Haman that there are problems. They came back. They came back to Bavel to assist Klal Yisrael in the best way they saw fit, which would be to deal with, work with the people that were still living in Bavel. So now, that was the first ascent during the time of Koresh. Then they came back, or at least some of them came back. And then, in the second year of Daryavish, after the Pusur Purim, they came up a second time. A second group of people went up to Eretz Yisrael to participate in the completion of the Beis HaMikdash. And then, 4-5 years later, after they resumed building, Ezra now ascends to Eretz Yisrael, and we could assume, as we're going to see, with Ezra's going, all of the many great people would accompany Ezra to Eretz Yisrael, because Ezra was one of the greatest personalities in the history of Klal Yisrael. So in total, it's important to keep in mind, there were three different major aliyahs, three different groups of waves of aliyah during the first year of Koresh, during the second year of Daryavish, and during the 7th year of Daryavish. And that's
Ezra during the story of Purim.
was in Bavel. Ezra was clearly in Bavel during the time of Purim. Because it's a good point. He's, how come he's not mentioned? He's asking an excellent. It's very mysterious.
Daniel's such not mentioned either, right?
Daniel is alluded to. Daniel is mentioned. Vayavo Hasoch. So Hasoch, and also there's one of the seven Shivas. Sorry, Parasimodai. Haman. Okay, there was someone else there mentioned that some allude, some want to suggest was Daniel. So Daniel is alluded to. His name is not said the Farish. We know Daniel. Daniel has many names. Sheshbatzar, Baltashatzar, and he is Daniel. Daniel has many names, and he is alluded to in the Megillah in various parts of the Megillah and in the various Midrashim, but. You're asking an excellent question. What about Ezra? Ezra, we learned yesterday, was one of, if not the greatest personality in Tanakh. He was Shokel Keneged Moshe V'Aaron. He was equal to Moshe, and he was even greater than Aaron HaKohen. And where was he during the time of the Purim? Well, he had to be in with his Rebbe Baruch ben Neriah, which was in Bavel. So he was there. Why don't we find him participating in advising Esther or Mordechai? It's very
there. He wasn't in Shushan.
He was in Bavel.
Yeah.
Okay, but he was such a great personality.
Okay, but
we see later who Ezra Olam Yibavel.
He was the leader in that area.
Exactly, he was a leader. But you would assume if we are mentioning Mordechai, you know they all network. Today we know it's all about networking. Every organization, you know, is trying to steal the resources, which they still borrow or live off some of the resources of their other organizations, which can assist them in the best way possible. You always see in all the newspapers, everyone is trying to network, and who's the guest speaker by this one's dinner? This one. And by this one's dinner, everyone is trying to network. So they didn't network in those days, and especially Ezra, who was we can't even begin to understand how great he was. And yet, where is he during the time of Purim? Lahashmid laharabu la'abedis kol ha'yehudim min aviyard zokein. That's a big question. This question is a major question. It's not something just to brush off. I do not have an answer. Maybe we'll come across something at some point in time. Okay, let's go further. So we have here in the Mitzvot, so he makes that point that we should be aware that there are three different aliyos. Milvad mashalu berishoyna im zubavel olu shum im Ezra. He only mentions the first aliyah, but we are very well aware of the second aliyah during the time of Daryavesh. So the grand total, three aliyos. Now there's important Gemara Masechet Kedushin. Now we discuss this, but here is the pasuk which the Gemara quotes. Let me read you the Gemara Masechet Kedushin Daf Samach Tes in Perik Asor Yuchsin Omar Rabbi Elazar Lo Ola Ezra Mibavel Ad She Asa Kisoyles Nikia. He did not ascend until he purged from the residents of Bavel anyone whose yichus genealogy was suspect. He made sure everyone that he's leaving over is of the purest yichus, can trace their yichus back to the Aseres HaShvatim. Why? Because, as we discussed in great detail, because he was afraid that no one would watch over these people, and if they were individuals whose yichus was not 100%, they may be a Suffolk mamzer, and if they were to marry among the other mainstream Jews, then they would be a proliferation of mamzerim, nesinim, and who knows what. So therefore, Ezra, he went and he took with him all, he forced them, he grabbed them by the neck and said, you're coming with me, because if I'm going to leave you here, who knows what's going to happen to the people over here, the good people, and so he took all the problematic, and that's, the Gemara quotes this pasuk, Vayalu mibnei Yisrael, he took from the nation of Menachem, Hanim Elvim, Amsharim, Vahasharim, Vahanesinim. It could be that the word Hanesinim is really that was what triggers the Gemara's understanding. He forced the Nesinim to come. On Pasuk Zayin. Why would Ezra force the Nesinim to come? Why? Because they needed people to be the water carriers and wood choppers, maybe. What?
Want to keep a close hand?
Right, that's the answer. What triggered the Gemara to tell this, to them, Ezra, where did they find the biblical source that Ezra took with him these people? This word, the Hanesinim. He took the Nesinim, because the Nesinim, they represent, even though they're just one group, they are Mamzerim, and they are Shesuke, Asufe, there's a whole long list of all the problematic people, but the Nesinim seemingly was the largest of this group, who were not allowed to marry into the remainder of Klal Yisrael, because they were not really full-fledged Jews, were not 100%, their gerus was questionable. And he represents that he forced them, you're coming with me. Could very well be they had very good lives in Babel. They had good jobs. Coming to Eretz Yisrael, you're going to be third-rate citizens. You're going to be the water carriers. You're going to be the wood choppers. But you're coming with me because I leave you here. Who knows the churban you're going to make here. I just listened yesterday to a tape and to a shir and describing what went on in America. The early years of America, talking about the very beginning of the 20th century, where there were very few rabbanim, and divorce, people didn't get divorced. Someone went, they were remarried. They got a civil divorce. Mamzerim, mamish, a proliferation of mamzerim. And what about even stories with women, a lot of the stories were women who marry their brother-in-laws. If Rahman al-Utslan, a man would die. So it was very common. So Yibim is only mutter when there are no children. And even that is not done really, Bizman Hazed. There's really a ban against a brother-in-law marrying his sister-in-law when there are no children. We do chalitza. Sfardim technically still do Yibim, but even Sfardim today, I'm not so sure they do it. But if the almana, the widow, has a child, then it's a chayve kresos. For her, a woman to marry her brother-in-law after she has a child, there is no mitzvah of Yibum. This is one of the Chayvei Kresos. And this was done. So I was listening to the shir, so the one who was giving the shir was Rabbi Rakefet, your classmate. So he quoted Rav Soloveitchik. I'm not sure I'm quoting him correctly, but he said that Rav Soloveitchik said he would give up his entire Olam Haba if he could just establish in America a system to prevent the proliferation of mamzerim. That's how bad it was when he came to America. There was so, there's nothing you can do to solve these cases. Yeah.
There was another problem. Usually the breadwinner would come to America.
Yeah.
The husband, with the wife and kids, and there were cases where he forgot about them. He didn't marry someone else.
Yeah.
He just literally
forgot. And then what happened to them? So some of them were agunos. Or some of them, who knows? They remarried other people. Shleike didn't know. No get. Rachman al-Utslan. But they came to America. It was just hefkeres. And Rav Soloveitchik said he would give up his entire Olam Haba if only if he could, in exchange for establishing some type of authority in America where people would properly get divorced and properly follow the halacha in the inyan of gerushin v'kedushin. And when you read Ezra, then you appreciate, after you hear that share, then you can appreciate what Ezra was doing. We don't really appreciate this. Being the Ezra, God took these people, you're coming with me. No, I'm not. I have a job. I have a family to support. I don't care. You're coming with me. Pack your bags. We're leaving. Wheels up. Is that the expression? Wheels up in 3 hours. Just get on the plane with me. That's the end.
What? Original at-risk people.
Yeah. Well, they're at risk of causing harm.
Right.
They're at risk of causing harm to other people. And he forced them to come with him. And when you understand and you study early American history, where there's just no authority and this religion is very weak, Rachman al-Utslan, a mamzer, there's no solution. There are poskim today that are extremely brilliant, extremely creative in finding a solution to every halachic problem. You have a problem, you can find a solution. There's always a solution. There's always some type of kunz, some type of legal loophole that you can come onto that will solve a problem. But mamzerim, even the most brilliant of the brilliant, don't have solutions to solve situations where men marry women, where a woman gets married without receiving a proper divorce, especially when she had a kosher marriage. One thing, if you have the whole machlokes, you have a civil marriage, she'll say that it's not, that's a machlokes of henkin. If you need to get, you don't need to get. You say mamzer, but let's say you have mamish a kosher marriage, and then there's no divorce. Yeah.
That loophole comes in where the marriage was performed, let's say, by...
By reform marriage, exactly. Reform rabbi. Or the witnesses were not kosher witnesses. Even in those situations, it's not so simple. But when you hear and you study the history of America, then we can come back and we can appreciate exactly what it says here in the Gemara. Ezra went and he took up with him all of the problematic people.
Went voluntarily. We saw that they went from the first time.
I don't know. The Gemara does say that he forced them. He forced them to come up. It could be everyone. You can't generalize. Certainly, there were some people that did not have a good life. Mishana Mok and Mishana Mazel. They were Zionistic, or they were idealistic, or maybe they had property in Eretz Yisrael from 70 years ago. They came back to throw out the squatters and take back their possessions. So you don't know. Everyone's story is different. You can't generalize. But the Gemara does tell us that there were definitely very significant pockets of people that were problematic that did not want to go. And as you said, I'm sorry, I'm not giving you a choice. You're coming with me because I can't leave you here. And this expression is a beautiful expression. Kisoyles nikia. The leftovers were the finest flour. There were no impurities whatsoever, and their yichus was even better, was more refined than the people that were living in Eretz Yisrael, because among Eretz Yisrael you had a very big mix. Okay, they were watched. They were talmidei chacham. They were neviim. There was Ezra who made sure, but you can't make sure every 100%. It's only that much you can do. People want to make trouble. They'll make trouble. But in Bavel there was no trouble to make because all of the problematic people were removed. Let's go further. Pasuk Ches Vayevo Yush by Mishnas.
On that time, there wasn't any restriction for the Jews to go from Babel to Israel.
What?
Any restriction wasn't that they should not
go to
Israel from
Babel? There was no restriction now. Now there's permission. Now is Dar Yavesh is giving permission to go back and rebuild the Beis Hamikdash. The word was rebuilt. And not only that, he told them that you could have, I'm giving you funds, I'm giving you money, we're going to see now. There's no restriction now. The restriction has been lifted. Pasik Ches. Vayovo Yerushalayim Achidash HaChamishi Hi Shnas HaShvis LeMelech. They arrived, and this is a very important pasuk. They arrived in Chodesh HaChamishi, that is Rosh Chodesh Av. They arrived in Chodesh Av, which is the fifth month, which is the seventh year of the king. Now, what is the pasuk here doing? The pasuk is telling us that it's the seventh year of the king, and it's the fifth month. Wait a minute, but when it comes to the non-Jewish kings, we count from Tishrei. This is a Gemara Masechta at Rosh Hashanah. The Gemara tells us we calculate the years for Jewish kings. The year begins with Chodesh Nisan. HaChodesh Hazeh Lochem Rosh Chodoshim. For non-Jewish kings, their year begins Chodesh Tishrei. And Rosh Hashanah, when you blow the shofar, that's when they're your king. So if you have a king that's appointed, let's say in Elul, let's say for argument's sake, let's say Obama would have come to office in Chodesh Elul, and then we have, it's now after Rosh Hashanah, so Obama is in his second year as the President of the United States, because as far as we're concerned, his first year was Elul, that last month. He was in office for a few days, make-believe situation, and then now you pass through Tishrei, it's already the second year. So if we're going to refer over here to the king of Daryavish, we're saying that we're connecting the two, that Daryavish, it's the seventh year, and it's the fifth month, that seems to say, there's at least, it's not explicit, but there is an implication, which Chazal do pick up on, and we're going to see a little more detail in a few moments, is that we're counting Daryavish from the Jewish months. Which means that we're now in his seventh year, and his seventh year began in Chodesh Nisan, which now, if they're arriving in the fifth month, which means in Chodesh Av, it's 5 months into his seventh year. But wait a minute, Daryavesh is not Jewish. Now, even though you'll tell me, no, but he is the son of Esther, and Esther is Jewish, and the child follows the mother. Okay, that might be true. That is a debate. But in the big picture of things, he represented, he was not observant. Or at least not observant as we know it. and therefore he represented the non-Jewish world. And if he represents the non-Jewish world, he should be counted as a non-Jewish king in this respect. And his year should count from Tishrei. So the answer is, Chazal, this is a Chazal, that we'll see in this moment, they tell us, he was a Melech Kosher Hava. And that's why he was called, in one context, he was called Koresh. Even though we refer to Koresh as the grandfather, but some Farshim learn him as Koresh Melech Kosher, and being that he was good to the Jews as a reward for his goodness, that he let the Mikdash be rebuilt, we calculate his years like the Jewish kings. That's the ultimate compliment the Rabbanon, the Nevi'im, can give a non-Jewish king. Like you go to a king, you present a gift. What are you going to give the king? The king has everything he can possibly want. He has all the money in the world.
Pasuk, can you show us, please?
Pasuk Ches. Perek Zayin Pasuk Ches. The king has Ches. The king has everything he can possibly want. What can you give him?
Covet.
So what kind of covet? What, I'm going to bow down to you, give you a new crown? We are going to calculate in our record books, we're going to calculate you as one of the Jewish kings. That is a gift. That's the real deal. Alexander the Great, what was the deal? What did they do? We'll name all the babies. We'll name all the babies after you. Don't destroy the Beis HaMikdash. Don't interfere. Don't get involved. And we will give you covet. Every little baby that's going to be born this year, there's a question how long this covet lasted. I mean, then it proliferated because people would name when they would die after those children, Ariamazeh, Alexander Zusha. Even have the Hasidim, there's a whole site of Hasidim, the Alexander Hasidim. They were the biggest group of Hasidim, completely wiped out. Unbelievable. They were the biggest in numbers in pre-war, the biggest in all the Hasidim. And they were decimated, completely wiped out. So here we have, and all that, where's the name come from? Alexander the Great, because that was kovoid. You got to be creative. When Obama went to Queen Elizabeth, what did he give her?
Junk.
What did he give her? He gave her DVDs, movies, the latest pop culture in America, some movies. That's reruns. Does that make any sense? Is that kovoid?
That's
it shows. Times have changed. You read this, you want to really fataych, you read this hadoyos among the goyim, that's where it is. Look at the cover they gave Daryavish. We're going to count in our history books, we're going to consider you a Jewish king. And look what Obama gave Queen Elizabeth. A bunch of DVDs, old movies. At least give preview, something coming up noon. So this is
reflection on the giver than the receiver.
Sign of the times. Okay, so we have over here Bishna Sheva Liartach Shasta Hamelach. Now, by the way, I just told him that I'm a Pasiches. Vayevo Yushlam Achadish Achamishi Yishnas Hashvi 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 Slamelach Latzibur Ashi Mibashi Achadish Achamishi Hu Chodesh Av. We all know that. We know that Hatzoim Harivivi, Hatzoim Hachamishi, Rivi is Shivasa Betamus, Hachamishi is Tisha Be'of, Hu Chodeshav, Kibiach and Chodesh Nisan Oisayam, Haisa Tichlas Aliyasam, Mibavel. So we're going to see in the next Pasuk, Rashi is giving us foreshadowing, giving us some preview. In the next, we're going to learn that they start, the ascent began on Rosh Chodesh Nisan. On Rosh Chodesh Nisan, everyone got together. They all camped out at the bus stop. Everyone showed up, and they didn't go right away. They had to do some planning. It took some time until they actually left. But they all got together. And they arrived exactly 5 months on Rosh Chodesh Av. So it's a very good thing to remember. You know, all the different secret holidays, they have to always keep in mind. We always say you keep in mind the holiday, the third day of Adar is a holiday. It's the anniversary of the completion of the Bayis Sheni. What happened on Aleph Shvat? We spoke about that. Last 2 weeks ago, Aleph Shvat. Tu B'Shvat. But what else? What else is Aleph Shvat? It's Mishneh Torah. When Moshe Rabbeinu went and he presented Mishneh Torah. What happened on Aleph Av? To Yom Tif. This was the day. What? Aaron also done in Nechanami. That's what we learned in Mishnah. That's one of the exceptions when you're allowed to fast on Rosh Chodesh, is because Aaron died on Rosh Chodesh Av. And what else? There's another Rosh Chodesh. I don't remember. There's another Rosh Chodesh where you're allowed to fast. Someone else died on that Rosh Chodesh. Maybe it was Nisan. It was Aleph Nisan. Someone died. I don't remember. I have to go back to the Mishnah Berurah, Chelek Dal at the end where it says that. But even though it's a sad day that Aaron died on Rosh Chodesh Av, it's also a happy day. It's a happy day because Ezra arrived. And it's something very interesting because what did the pastor tell? We learned yesterday in great detail. Who Ezra Olam Ibavel. And we connect it to the previous pasuk, Ben Elazar Ben Aharon HaKoyen HaRoish Hu Ezra. HaRoish Hu Ezra. That Ezra was even greater than Aaron. On the same day when Aaron died, Ezra entered, made his mark on Eretz Yisrael. That's not something which is a coincidence. There's some significance in that he arrived on the days of the anniversary of his Petir. Let's see over here, Rashi, in the Mitzudas and Pasuk Ches, there is no Mitzudas, now we go to Pasuk Tes, Ki. So now the Pasuk, they elaborate. Ki, Be'echad L'Chodesh HaRishon, Hu Yusat. On the first day of Chodesh Nisan, the first day L'Chodesh HaRishon, which is Nisan, Hu Yisud. Unusual usage of the form. Yisud. I don't know if you have it anywhere else in Tanakh.
What Pasuk are you reading from?
Pasuk Tes. Pasuk Tes. Hu Yisud. Hama'aloh mi'bavel, the ascent. Yisud means Lashon of a yisod, a foundation. And here in this one means it was established. It was the it was laid out. It was the beginning. Everyone got together and they assigned everyone a bus and a tag and everyone got a GPS. Everyone should not get lost and so on and so forth. That's what took place on the first day of Nisan. Hu yisud hama'aloh. The ascent was established, it began. Mibavel, uvi echol achodesh hachamishi, on the first day of chodesh hachamishi, bo el Yerushalayim. Notice the yud is missing, it's always missing, it's not a chodesh, it's always missing in Tanakh, except for Megillas Esther. Kiyad Eloikov hatoiva Allah. The only extra chodesh you can say about the extra yud that's missing, so I want to point out, is that this is written after Megillas Esther. So it's one thing you can tell me, this is a little bit of a drush off the topic, but one thing you can say, you know, a word is missing a letter. But then it comes a point in time where the letter is added. Oh, once it's added, it sticks. Right? Once you add a letter, it sticks. Once Sarai was changed to Sarah, that's it. She's called Sarah to the end of Tanakh. We'll have Sarah mentioned anywhere in Tanakh. Her name will be with a Sarah, not Sarai. Avraham. So you would think maybe throughout Tanakh, in Tehillim, and in Shmuel, and in Yeshaya, and in Yirmiyah, every time you'll find Yerushalayim, it's Choser. But when it comes to the Megillah, for whatever reason, Yerushalayim is spelled with a yod. So Yerushalayim earned its yod in the meal. Why? That's a separate story. It earned its yod. So once it gets the yod, it gets it for good. So now we come to Sefer Ezra, which was written after, supposedly was written after, or at least took place after, it should preserve its yod. No, the yod drops. The yod, we go back to the way it was before, which is a interesting in and of itself, because that really fits in with the theme that we discussed in the beginning of Perek Vav, Chagai and Zechariah. Chagai, both originally Chagai and Zechariah were called Nevi'im, but later Zechariah was no longer called a Navi. He lost his title of Navi. And the explanation given was because Zechariah's primary prophecy was in reference to Yemos HaMashiach, and it was meant to be with the rebuilding of the Bayis Sheni. Mashiach was meant to have, was supposed to come, was supposed to arrive. Everything was supposed to, Zerubbabel was supposed to be Melech HaMashiach, and it was supposed to be, the Geula was supposed to happen, but Klal Yisrael just did not, we were not able to clinch it. They did not want Mashiach enough. So everything was scaled down. And to allude to that tragedy of Mashiach not coming with the rebuilding of the Bayis Sheni, Zechariah went back to being called just Zechariah without the name Navi. Same thing. In the time of Purim, there was such an incredible hisoirus. There was a renaissance. Yerushalayim was mole. The yud of Yerushalayim was restored. Now, Yerushalayim, when there's going to be the rebuilding, everything is in play, everything is in motion. There was such incredible kimu v'kiblu ha-yehudim, such a hakara of the miracle. Mashiach was going to come. Mashiach was going to come, was going to be with Yerushalayim, was a yud, mole. But then things cooled off. And just like Zechariah lost his title Navi, Yerushalayim lost its yud once again. Okay, so that's an important idea, because again, normally you don't lose, you only gain. You don't go backwards. But here we are indeed going backwards in Yerushalayim. Bo'el Yerushalayim.
Mordechai is not mentioned here.
Mordechai was alluded to. We had one of the names in the beginning of the Sefer, one of the names, someone said was Mordechai. I don't remember, but it was one of those long list of names.
Bilshan,
many languages. Bilshan, he was Bala Lashon, so we do have an allusion to him.
Where was he?
Now? Well, originally he went. In the time of Koresh, he went. He definitely came back. Did he go back with Ezra? Not, seemingly not. Because we assume he's buried there. Supposedly his kever is there. So from historically, Koresh, he never went. And also it says in the Megillah that he served in the capacity of a governor. He ruled a third of the world, or whatever it was. And he felt, and the Sanhedrin were not happy with him. Well, not that they were not happy with him. He had no choice. He had to. But L'roi Vechov, a Nedoim, a person that's fully immersed in Torah, is on a higher level. He's not going to get the kavod of being a famous person. But in Chazal's eyes, being Oisik in Torah Yom V'Layla is a much greater contribution to this world. Hard for us to understand, but that's what Chazal say, is a much greater contribution to this world. It's a greater level than being Osik in government and being the leader in the capacity that he was. What?
Working for the klal.
Work klal. It's hard to understand. I mean, there's a balance obviously between the two, but okay, we'll leave with that. Right. So now we have to go further. We have to go. Pasuk test. Kiviyachad l'chadish harish. We have to go further. Yusad hamalom soon. Hamalom ibavel biyachad l'chadish hamish ibo el yushlam. Now here we have these concluding words. Kiyad eloikov hatoyva olav. Like the good, due to the good grace of a Kadosh Baruch Hu upon him, upon Ezra. Now let's see what exactly that means in more detail in Pasuk Tes and Rashi. Yusar Hamala Yisoid Tchilas Haliyah. It was established the beginning of the ascent. Kiyad Lekav. What does that mean? Kasher Hitzlichu. It means success. In this context, Kiyad means power, and the power is the Kadosh Baruch Hu caused Ezra to be successful. Kiyad Kasher Hitzlichu Yad Kadosh Baruch Hu Shahay So Yadoi Toiva Olavli Hatzlichoi Bidrachav Hashem. Put his hand upon Ezra to bring about his success. Success is a gift from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You can have the greatest brains and all the money and all the popularity, but if you don't have the Yad Hashem Olav, you'll get nowhere. And we all know that to be 100% true. And you have people who are the biggest shemazels, and they're so shvach, no depth, and they're multi-billionaires. Where does it come from? And everything they do, they're successful. Where does it come from? We don't know Hashem's ways, but it's Kiyad Hashem Eloikov Lov. Ayhi Ish Matzliach. That's what it says by Yosef. Ish Matzliach, a man of success.
Before Pasuk Vav, when it said Kiyad Hashem Eloikov, Rashi Shetiva Akadosh Baruch Hu.
Very good. So it depends on the context. Excellent. Right. So it all depends on the context. Right. And what in the Mesudas there say means Chain. It means Hashem put Chain. So you see that it's a very abstract term, which can be molded many ways depending on the commentator and the context. So you're right, and Hanami sees it. And there, like by Yosef, the post is much more specific. Vayihi ish matzliach. Doesn't leave any room for doubt, Yad Elokov. And it says, Vayitin Hashem chino b'enei paro. Hashem gave put chain. It doesn't say Yad by Yosef, chain, and ish matzliach. Ezra, what are we doing over here? Yad, Hashem, what does it mean? Rashi, Metzudas, playing around here. I don't know. Obviously, there's something different. Something different. Let's see over here the Metzudas Pasuk Tes. Yisod Hamala. Yisud. Yisud Hama'ala. Hascholas Waliya Mibavel Vehushal. It's a borrowed word. The word Yisud is Hushal. It's borrowed. It doesn't can't be taken literally. Literally, it means you make a foundation, you make a building, you bring stone and dirt, you make a foundation. Vehushal from the concept of making a structure. When you make a building, you lay a foundation. So here, what does the Asher HaYisod Hu HaSchololah? The foundation is the beginning of a structure. So here it's Hushal, it's a borrowed word, a borrowed term. That's one of his favorite words, the Mesudas David, Vehushal. It's borrowed from other contexts to be used. He has a way with words. Mesudas is unbelievable. This is an unbelievable Mesudas, a real Clarkite. Kiyat, Rod Soloimar, Mihar Bederich Mahalcha, he was swift. Kimoy Shahi Olaf Koyach Lokov, he was swift. So Kiyat over here, the Mesudas says, has some connotation of swiftness. Okay, that's a chiddush. Doesn't say that in the pasuk anywhere. He is adding a very deep level of interpretation. Mi'er b'derech mahalcho, he was quick in his ascent and traveling. Kimo shohoya olav koyach elokav ashohoya toiva olav. So that's what he reads into the pasuk, that the number of days, this period of time of 5 months, was kfitzas haderech. Which is interesting. Which is very interesting because, first of all, is that we have to really study ancient history. How long did it really take? Are there any records of people traveling and try today? That would be like a project, a research project in some exotic graduate school where we're going to reenact the ascent of the Jewish people from Babel to Eretz Yisrael, and we'll time it and we'll trace their footsteps. How long will it take? Should it take?
Well, so, we're talking about a large group, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, which is a lot.
But the Crusades is very well documented. Their accounts.
How many miles?
What? I don't know. I don't know how many miles there's. I don't know.
Remember we said that you have to go
up north. You got to go north. You can't go directly.
You
got an arc. You got to go north. Mitzofoin tiposachara. They come from the north. What do you mean the north? They're not in the north. They're down south. No, the bubble has to come up and come down. Don't worry. We're almost finished. Don't worry. It's okay. Okay, so we have over here, so this is something which he wants to read into the pasuk of Kiyad Elokav HaTov HaOlav, that he's coming to explain. The Mesudas again is saying something very different than Rashi. He's coming to explain that there's a hidden message. The ascent began on the first day of Nisan and ended on the first day of Av. 5 months. What are you talking about, 5 months? That's what Limsa is saying. If you'll go ask a scientist, or you'll go ask people who are in the travel industry business, they'll tell you, no way 5 months. It takes 8 months, 10 months. Impossible to get there so quickly. How long does it take to go from here to Lakewood? So I got there in 45 minutes. You're a liar. It doesn't take 45 minutes. It takes at least, what?
Speeding.
45 minutes?
2 in the morning.
Speeding? Even that's pretty quick. So it's like you're a liar. Telling me it took you 5 months? No way. That's what the end of the pasuk is telling us. The pasuk is telling us kfitzas haderech enochnami boel yushan. Why? It was because kiyad eloikov hatoiv olav. So not hatzlocha. It's a different word. It's not hatzlocha. It's not chayin. Kfitzaderech. Yeah.
As if the hand of Hashem is pushing.
He is pushing you to get there quickly. And this obviously is something very interesting. Why? Because when Klai Yisrael came into Eretz Yisrael, do they have kfitzaderech? Not exactly. The first time they came was 40 years in the desert.
Yeah. So.
Elokim derech eretz l'shem ki koroiv hu. So fakir, when they came to Eretz Yisrael, there was no kfitza saderech. I mean, you have to modify that. 40 years they were in the desert for 40 years. So how long does it take to go from Eretz Mitzrayim to Eretz Canaan? Takes a year. So why did it take you 40 years? I'm just making up numbers. Why did it take you 40 years? Hashem didn't want you to go so quickly for all the different reasons. But here in the second Aliyah, which was again the third wave of the second Aliyah, Kfitzas Haderech. What's going on here? Obviously, it's a different ascent. The second Aliyah is different than the first Aliyah. it was different in many ways, but in the respect of the time factor, we do find at least some indication that it was kafid sadeh. Let's see, pasuk. Give one more pasuk. We'll get the samach. Ki Ezra heichim levavo. Why was Ezra zocha to this success according to Rashi, or to this kafid sadeh? Ezra heichim levavo. He prepared his heart. We have three different things. Ezra did three. We have three categories of who. This is a critical pasuk to understand who was Ezra. Pasuk Yud. This pasuk is defining the essence of Ezra. Ki heichin levavo lidroish es toras Hashem. That's number one. Number two, vilaasos, and to do, not just to learn. Godol limud shemevi lide maisa. He was not just no dorish no mekayim. He fulfilled what it said. He didn't just go darshan in. This is double standard. No double standard. Whatever he said, he did himself. Ulamed biyisrael chayku mishra, and he was the ultimate teacher. He taught. He transmitted the Messiah to the next generation, and he instituted Kriyas HaTorah, which is the essence of Talmud Torah. That is the purest form. Daf Yomi comes from Kriyas HaTorah. Where does Daf Yomi come from? It comes from Parshas HaShavua. Everyone is holding in the same parsha. Everyone's on the same page. Who was the one who really instituted Daf Yomi? Ezra. Not Rav Meir Shapiro. Not Rav Meir Shapiro. Everyone's giving credit. Rav Meir Shapiro. What was his name? It was his mother. But it really comes all the way back to Ezra HaSofer, who instituted Talmud Torah. So these are the three different things that Ezra did. He made many takanas, gzeros, which we'll learn about later. Let's just see over here. Let's see over here the Rashi. Rashi pasuk yud ki Ezra v'al kain holach v'yitzliach b'darkoi. This is why he was successful. Rashi is going l'shitosai. Yad Hashem means success. Shrei Ezra heichel levavo v'goymer v'noisin tam l'dvarav. And the pasuk here is giving a reason for his success. So Rashi learns pasuk yud is a taz the tam. Why was he successful? Because he was heichel levavo lidroi shtaris Hashem. And la'asos ulame b'shol chayko mishra. Let's see if we have the mitzvahs pasuk yud ki Ezra chaychin ulezeh hoy olav yada lukav l'toyva. And for this reason, he was successful because he had a mission in life. Okay, now there is just one little medrash Tehillim that says beautiful medrash. Let me read you the words inside. This is medrash on Mizmar Kufches. Mizmar Kufches, and this tells us about the Koyach HaTzvila. You don't have this in front of you. I'm just reading from a Medrash. You do not have the text. I'm reading. It says here in the Medrash, Omar Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachmeni, Im Kovanta Libcha B'Tzvila, if you apply yourself when you pray, Tehei Mevusar, you will be announced, it will be told to you, Shet Tzvilascha Nishmas Lefnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. How do we know this? How do we know that if a person really applies himself sincerely to daven, he will merit that his tefillah will be answered? This pasuk is the source. V'cheinu ki Ezra heichin levavo. Ezra had kavana, and we connect this pasuk heichin levavo v'yitnoi hamelech kiyad elokav hatoiva olav, and we connect this pasuk to what we said back pasuk vav. Okay, so the Medrash is doing something very interesting. It's connecting two psukim, which are not connected to each other, but are interpreted together. Pasuk Yud says, Ezra Heichin Levavo, which we interpret to mean that he had kavana when he davened. Eze avoyde shebelev, zo tzvila. Anytime it refers to heart service, it refers to tzvila. And so here, being that it says these two powerful words together, Heichin Levavo means Ezra davened with kavana. What was the reward? It's a medrash. I don't know how the medrash is able to do this, but it does so. It goes back to pasuk vav. Go up to pasuk vav. Who Ezra olam bavel who sefer mahir besaras Moshe ashenos na Hashem elokei shol vayitin lo hamelech ki yad Hashem elokav olav kol bakosh oso. So when we learned this pasuk, we made it crystal clear the word Hamelech refers to who? It refers to Daryavish. Daryavish gave Ezra all of his needs. But the Medrash interprets this pasuk, Vayitin loy Hamelech Hashem.
And Hashem. The way it does in Megillas Esther.
Every time it's a melech, it alludes to a melech malchim amlochim. Hashem gave him kiyat Hashem elokav olav kol bakosha. So why did the melech give him? Hashem give him according to the power of Hashem. Hashem bestowed upon him his hand. Why? Because of pasuk yud. Because heichin levavo. So here the Medrash is telling us, do not underestimate the koyach hatzfila. If you daven, be guaranteed Hashem will give you kiyad Hashem elokav olav. Okay, we'll stop here.